Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So we'll try this new background image thing. This is kind of old now, more than a year and a half, I guess. When I had a couple of people working on animations, and both of them, you know, their real life got in the way. And so we were sort of stuck at a point where things were looking good. But not quite, still not quite right. And lots of simple rules. So in this case, there was a right-hand rule. But it creates some problems. So rather do without it. It was just built in. But you can see it certainly would help in terms of the illustrating the formation of nucleuses. And so, yeah, it's kind of a nice visualization of what it would end up being. So I'm going to talk some about a simple mechanism that makes it understandable how matter moves and how it moves a little different than the elemental bits that are actually making the matter move. And so, yeah, we'll get to that and transition to it eventually. First, got a little piece of crap to do, a little business, always something. So somebody posted a link to a rather useless, you know, it's just kind of a stupid link, so we'll go to it. Well, I guess I should point out, so they said stay deluded, stay strong with some sort of emoticon of some kind. And it's a link, you know, this is, well, I'll go to the link. All right, so this is the 2017 amateur who did the Eddington experiment. And so it's just such a sham for people to, not to concede that this is way underdoing it. This isn't doing the experiment better than it was done in 1920. This is doing it a lot less than. So we had a perfect eclipse over North America. I mean, you couldn't get better. 12 noon, okay? The smallest amount of atmosphere to go through, and the atmosphere degrades the quality of your images by 400 times. So you get 400 times crappier view of the universe from the ground than you do from space. So you go a few miles up into space, get out of the atmosphere, huge difference. That's why they put telescopes on top of mountains, is because they want to reduce the amount of atmosphere in the way. All right, and so, you know, with all the great technology in North America, no one, even though it was a perfect eclipse and almost the 100th anniversary, right, 2 years from the 100th anniversary of the Eddington experiment, and this is the best we get, a 3-inch or so telescope by an amateur using a, you know, mediocre, by today's standards, digital camera. I mean, you know, and you people just won't concede this is far short, okay? I mean, this isn't like some published paper, okay? I mean, it hasn't been accepted as, you know, a great piece of science, because it is, you know, kind of unrealistic and amateurish. And it doesn't even follow the same procedure as the Eddington experiment, is that some of the photos aren't actual photos. They're simulations created by software that he's making comparisons to. Not exactly what you'd call verification or we've proven. So this is the evidence they want everybody to fall for and say, and they want to call other people dupes because they don't accept this. I mean, I can't even describe how nothing these pixels are, right? We're talking about 7 pixels. 7. I mean, the margin for error is gigantic, you know, when you're trying to decide where something is and you're deciding out of 7 or 8 pixels. This is hardly, a pristine, beautiful, perfect proof or something. So again, there's 400 times better resolution in space, and we haven't, up in space, you can use a digital camera. You can use really crappy technology because of that 400 times, not 40, not 4, 400 times better resolution from space. It's a huge advantage, and physics hasn't taken advantage of that huge advantage. And you have to wonder why. I mean, this is a really key experiment. This is what made Einstein famous. It wasn't his papers. It wasn't this. It was this experiment. This was the defining line, was him being validated in his prediction that light would be bent twice as much. Not that just it would be bent, but that it would be bent twice as much. Okay, and this is the real problem. I mean, doing this experiment anywhere within the range of this energy that's spewing out of the sun is degrading any hope of your experiment being accurate in the sense of getting a true image that isn't already being distorted either by the Earth's atmosphere or obviously this gigantic atmosphere around the sun. A huge disadvantage. As Einstein pointed out, Jupiter would be a good place to look to do this experiment because you don't have all of that noise around Jupiter. You know, once you're outside of its clearly defined atmosphere, there's no area where there's a huge amount of particles flying off of Jupiter. So anyway, so this is what they will attempt to mock your reasoning skills by saying, well, if you don't accept this as definitive proof, well, you're just some sort of unreasonable asshole. Clearly, this is not what proof should look like. It should look a lot better than this. A lot better. Yeah. So, anyway. Get that out of the way. All right, so I'm back. So this simulation was pretty good. Both were pretty good. There might be future work done, hopefully. And, so it might get even clearer. So there's really simple rules that govern this behavior. It just has to do with there being two kinds of force, the blue and the red, and two kinds of reactions that the electrons, in this case the blue objects and the protons, can produce. And they're just inverse to each other. So the orange object does the opposite of what the blue object does when a given force affects it. And so with that simple concept, you can create a lot of activity that looks organized, but it's organized based on a really simple rule. So the consequence of that is, I don't know if this is, once these videos are edited for display purposes, some of that might look like shit, but we'll see. All right, so the idea is I'm arguing, we'll see if this other color works. Okay, just a minute, please. Let's see if it shows up as anything. Can you see that? Yeah, you can see that well enough. All right, so let's say this was an electron, and these were protons. All right, and the argument would be that a proton and an electron close together like this would basically be called a neutron. All right, so you could think of this as being a neutron, and this as being the extra proton. So all nucleuses are basically made out of this object, you could say. I mean, it's not a bad theory. Okay, so if you look at the periodic table, you'll see these are counted in this kind of arrangement, this 2-to-1 arrangement, and that makes the overall nucleus positive because it has twice as many protons as it does electrons, essentially, effectively, if you consider neutrons to be what they decay into, which is a proton and an electron. So all of that fits pretty well. So the idea is that as I have explained numerous times, there's a black force and a black object, and the idea would be if black force hits it, it moves it. Okay, it sticks to it and moves it until a counter force, that is another piece of force, hits from the opposite direction, and then they'll both reflect. And you'll get back what you had, and this would stop moving. And obviously, 10 can come from this way, and so something can move quite fast. So with each hit, it moves, say, 10% of the speed of light. 10 of them would be, 100%. But obviously that would be by some transformation. You know, you wouldn't add 10% each time. It'd be a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. So there's no infinity problem, blah, blah, blah. And if the opposite force hits, what happens is it just goes straight through and changes to the force that it is. So if an orange or whatever, we'll just say gray, if a gray goes in, it is converted, and if the same force hits, it gives it momentum. So with that simple model, you could understand that this simple relationship that allows protons to get very close to electrons allows that to happen, because any force that goes through the proton, the black, it would have to come out black. Even if it came in orange, it comes out black. So it could only come out black. And that would go straight through the electron and turn orange and go straight through another proton. So this proton couldn't be affected by any of the force coming off of this proton, and this proton couldn't repel this proton. You could understand if the two of them were next to each other and they had force between them, the force would go back and forth at a very high rate, like two ping pong paddles with a ball bouncing between them. The closer I bring the paddles, the more hits the ball has, and the hits are what causes momentum. So you can understand that it could create quite a bit of energy. Well, you can't quite see that. It's there, but fuck it. you know, I've been over this numerous times. Anyway, the curious fact is that this orange thing sitting in here, if there's no force that can actually get to it. So if the protons, I didn't draw this very well, but let's just say this is more like this size. We'll make it a solid object that make it more visible. So the protons would still have some distance between each other because they still can reflect force here and here because they're bigger than the electron, let's say. But clearly where the electron is, there's no pressure, so they're going to be attracted. So they're going to have a little bit of repulsion, keep them a little bit of a distance away from each other. But they are attracted, so they're going to have... So that distance will be regulated by how big the electron is. I make the electron the same size, well, then the protons can stick to the electron. I make them a little bigger, then there's a relationship there. So, you know, physics says there's 1,000 times or 2,000 times difference between the electron size and the proton size. Who knows? You know, how much I trust physics. You know, but anyway. So the catch would be is that any force that would affect, okay, the electron in the middle really depends on the distance between these two. So the closer these protons are, the less area that can actually be affected by this. So this can't get any momentum in this direction or in this direction. So you can sort of see that no matter what happens, either on this side or this side, no orange force could ever get to this object. So it can't be moved in these two directions. So in this direction and this direction, it can't do anything. The only way it could be moved is in this direction or in some angle, depending on the distance. And so you have this curious fact that this is sitting in a complete limbo, that it has no capacity to acquire momentum if it doesn't hit something. If it's just sitting in between these two, it's stuck in an isolation booth of sorts. Now, you can also imagine there could be another proton here and another proton here really closing this off. So the idea would be is no matter what momentum that one already had going in, so let's say this is the evolution. Yeah, we can probably draw it here without too much trouble. So you have an electron that has acquired some momentum. So it's been hit by more force from one side than the other and has momentum in this direction. And let's say it encounters a proton, okay, because it's going to be attracted to the proton. And so now you're going to have a proton and an electron. And this electron, let's just argue that it actually does make contact with the proton. And so now it shares its momentum with the proton. So that would be like a neutron moving. Okay, so you could argue that this is now a neutron with momentum. But let's say it's in an environment where now another proton does this thing where it falls into this place behind it. Okay, so it gets a little momentum, it moves in the same direction, ends up behind it for some reason. Or let's say it's coming this way, it doesn't really matter how it gets caught, but it's going to get caught. It's going to feel the attraction of this electron, and it's going to settle into this position. So now you have the electron has its momentum, this proton has momentum. It's going to come into more force, okay, because it's moving, so drag will happen. So more force is going to hit it from this way because it's going this way. And when that force hits, it means it's the electron is going to react. The electron will end up pushing off the proton, okay, because the proton is now going to be stopped. The reflection has to happen at the proton. The reflection will be into the electron, so the electron will be broken free of this first proton. But it's still got its momentum. So it's still got most of its momentum. And clearly this one, it's still attracting the other proton. So the point would be is that this mechanism is sort of like the bucket example I've used in the past, where if you sort of understand, you throw something in, the initial energy goes this way. So you have a plus arrow, right? And so the cart moves, and then this bounces off and hits this side, and now the cart stops. But the fact is, it's going to bounce off this back side and go forward again, so it's going to start the cart again. So the cart stops, you know, because of hitting the back, then it hits the front again and goes, and then it hits the back and stops, and then it hits the front again and goes. And the electron's going to be in that same sort of position, where it's always going to retain its momentum. And it's just going to be bounced back and forth between these two walls. And so no matter what it runs into, this back proton will never feel any stopping energy. So all the drag that this one runs into, this proton will never feel. So it's always going to keep creeping at the same, it will keep going at the same velocity this was going originally. And it will always keep pushing the electron back that one little bit it lost. So the electron loses one little bit of momentum going this way, but it hits this proton that's going this way. All right, and so then it's going to be bounced forward again back into this one and regain what it lost to the drag. So any force it hits from drag, it's going to keep overcoming because it's bouncing back and forth. And this one can't, only this one incurs the drag. This one never gets dragged because of the electron. So anyway, so it's an interesting configuration that, you know, like I said, it's, I haven't simulated this yet. But, you know, it kind of just shows that the reason why it's, you know, helium nuclei. And helium nuclei are basically this arrangement, hydrogen atom, that this arrangement can be thrown in space and it'll keep going. Helium nuclei can reach us from far away distant planets or galaxies and stuff, but electrons and protons by themselves can't, because they end up getting dragged to a halt. So this is why we can't make a proton gun or an electron gun that actually shoots any distance. Even in space, we can't shoot electrons out of the space shuttle and hit a satellite or hit something with electrons, because they do lose their energy. They do drag to a halt. And so what we have to do is send nucleuses. If you want to send atomic bits, the smallest of the arrangement, you need this arrangement. You need these pieces, and the very fact that these pieces add up and that this simple arrangement of understanding these force laws actually creates this mechanism seems a pretty good indicator. So if you don't want to be a dupe, you would understand that, well, it's pretty amazing that this theory of how charge works, okay, having these two forces and the inverse reaction, actually does explain a whole different field of physics, a whole different field of mechanics than just charge, than just all the reactions we see in the reactions between electrons and protons. It also creates an answer to why there's a difference between this arrangement of elemental bits and arrangements where there's just one proton or two electrons or some other arrangement. Why does this one do what it's supposed to do? Do what is very different than the elements it's made out of. The elements can't do it. The combination can. So I just thought I'd throw that in because I hadn't recognized the limbo that this thing in the middle. I was just using the thing in the middle to explain the strong force. This is basically the strong force right here, you know. The fact that you have this electron in the middle is essentially negates the reflective force between the protons. So the strong force really is just the presence of an electron. The presence of the electron enables the proton force to be negated, essentially. So the strong repulsive force doesn't exist anymore. So it's not really a strong force, right? See, they're saying it has to be a strong force that pushes protons close together. But clearly, there's not a strong force that pushes them together. It's the negation of the force that allows them to be close to each other. So I'm just saying the very fact that you just come up with a mechanism that allows you to create a repulsion and attraction between charges, but it also explains the strong force, and it also explains why momentum, okay, is durable in material objects, how it gets past the drag problem. So it does answer those questions, and it does it well. And they call me the dupe, okay, because I fall for this mechanical explanation rather than some wooey bent space nonsense or entanglement nonsense or multiverse nonsense or, you know, immaterial fields of ether nonsense. All right, so I think that's probably enough. I just wanted to do the one subject, really. And so I did. And what the hell? Yeah, I turned it off and then turned it back on again for whatever reason. So we'll see how this comes out. Like I said, when I edit the videos to make them more web-friendly, this probably will mess up the resolution because it does run kind of fast. Lots of little stuff happening. So anyway, so this is dupe physics. You have to be a dupe to fall for this kind of simple mechanical process physics. Yeah, you're a dupe. Okay. Yeah, if you think that's a better answer than their silly standard model wooey gluon, puon, zuon, you know, all the other nonsense particles they create, the 400 other particles they create that are somehow holding things, the Higgs boson, you know, it's just magically creating gravity. Yeah. Come on. There are better answers. And you're just all bigots and just really don't care to hear. You don't care about the evidence. Again, the fact that none of these critics will admit that, gee, I sure wish they would do the Eddington experiment from the space station. They really should do that. I mean, they could even use Hubble and other technology, but, you know, they don't even want to make the effort to modify it enough to make it compatible with doing the experiment. So it's like they don't even want to try. You know, they don't even want to try. And, you know, that should bother people. It should bother you that they haven't redone the Eddington experiment from space. I mean, 400 times better resolution is a gigantic advantage. It should bother you that they haven't even done the momentum experiment, that they haven't even proven that it, generally speaking, takes 4 times more energy to go twice as fast. Why haven't they proven that with an experiment? They've had 300 years to do it, and they haven't done it. They're telling you 1/2 mv² is the truth, and yet I can't show you an experiment that proves it. I can show you a Mythbusters experiment that proves the opposite, you know, but that's all there is. And you think that physics is good enough, and you're going to call somebody else a dupe Okay, because they don't fall for your completely unevidenced nonsense? Yeah. So it's just a pitiful circumstance. I just can't believe how few reasonable, intelligent, honest people exist. Because it really shouldn't take long for honest people to say, yes, this is a subject that's important. It's important that we have evidence for our conclusions. It's important that we distinguish ourselves from fucking religious dupes, okay, who don't require evidence, who believe without reason. You should have good reason to believe something. And your people are the ones demonstrating you really don't care about good reason. You just want the conclusion to be you're great and you deserve everything. That's all. You want science to tell you that. You don't want science to tell you you're insignificant and disposable. That you're not worth what your cost. But whatever. That's just dismal. That's all that can be said, really. It's just dismal. So, anyways, this has been a draftphysics.com, debatephysicsalso.com, debatephysics.com also, not dot also. Anyway, but yes, you can't debate when there's nobody to debate. So until somebody interacts with the actual arguments I make, there's not much hope here. They got to do a little better than showing an amateur experiment that's unpublished in any respected, scientific journal, as, pristine science, as an argument. I mean, it's something better than that, as evidence. Gotta have a higher standard before you start insulting people for not believing. All right, so till the next time, such.